Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea.
Everybody Hello and welcome to Campfires and Color Wars, a podcast about summer camps and the stories we love to tell about them. Like the time we beat the staff 2-1 in a game of soccer, and they were actually trying. There's nothing funny about that story, it's just still one of my proudest accomplishments in sports. Draw your own conclusions from that. My name is Micah Hart, and for the next 45 minutes or so, we're going to press pause on the world around us. Transport back to the days of our adolescence, when the school year was just one long rest hour between days at camp. If you are enjoying the show, we would love it if you would give us a rating or a review on any of the various platforms where you listen to podcasts, so that we can continue to reach as many former campers as we can. Speaking of camps, I am so excited as we are releasing this. It is almost summertime, and I am going to be traveling around doing various programming to several camps this summer. Shout out to Jacob's Camp, to Gucci, to Ramah Berkshire's, Ramah New England, Tamarack Camps, and we still have a few dates left. So if you are interested in bringing us out for podcasting, for the game show, Who Knows One, for any kinds of other stuff, for staff soccer, hit us up. You can reach us at info@whoknowsone.com. That's the number one. Really, really enjoyed this episode with Caroline Rothstein, who is today's guest. She is a multifaceted, talented artist. She is an author. She is a performer. She is a wonderful storyteller. And we had a great conversation. And I do want to mention one thing that I just found really impressive about Caroline. Is we actually tackle some relatively challenging subjects in the course of our conversation, but I felt like we talked about them so casually, still respectfully, but you know, some of the things we talked about are often difficult for people to talk about, and the fact that she was able to do so so confidently and respectfully was just I just really enjoyed that. I think the more we talk about things, the less scary they become. So we had some I think, really poignant things to talk about, but also just some great stories were shared. So thank you, Caroline. And without further ado, let's get on with the show. My conversation about summer camp with Caroline Rothstein. Caroline, this is a little bit of a streak for me of sourcing podcast guests from contestants on Who Knows One. But if you're anything like the previous guests, I feel like this is a winning strategy for me. So thank you for making my life a little bit easier.
Honored to be here and to make your life easier, Micah. Yeah,
that's really all I'm looking for, is how can we make Micah's life easier? No, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. And I could tell even just from you know, playing around with you on the show, that you probably had a lot of fun things to share from growing up at summer camp. So, you know, let's start there. Tell us a little bit about your camp background. Where did you go? For how long? What are things that stand out to you from your experience?
Woo! My favorite question on the planet, because I love camp. So I went to Camp Walden in Denmark, Maine, which is a private camp and historically predominantly all girls. My mom went there. My sister went there. My dad's sister-in-law went there coincidentally. Like, we roll deep in Camp Walden in my family. So I was a camper from 1994 to 1998 for 5 summers. And then I was a counselor for 4 years in the early 2000s. And I remain heavily in the mix as an alum. And whether that is like informally being around as a sounding board, or I feel I can, as a journalist, I feel it is factual for me to say I am a walking camp encyclopedia of lyrics. So I am a go-to for people when they can't remember a lyric.
Nice. That is such a great camp specific skill to have.
Yeah. So I stay informally in the mix. And then I'm also, just like very involved as an alum and Very connected to many generations, from my mother's bunkmates to my bunkmates to the counselors that changed my life when I was a camper to my campers when I was a counselor to. So I, yeah, it's a huge, huge part of my life still.
Let me ask you this, because this is maybe similar to my experience. And I'm curious, did your dad go to summer camp?
My dad also went to summer camp, coincidentally 20 minutes away from where our camp was in Maine.
And was it a co-ed camp or was it a boys camp?
It was a historically all boys camp.
Okay. So then, all right. So then it's not the same. So my wife went to an all girls camp. She went to Camp Louise in Maryland. Yeah. And so when we got together and we're talking about the future, I was like, there is zero chance we are sending our kids to a single sex camp. Like, they will go to co-ed camp where they will learn the ways of things that, you know, you learn at summer camp. Mm-hmm. And then we, and so like, that was like a sort of a joke, but like, you know, we didn't have children at that point. We have since gone on to have two boys. So it was a moot point. But that's why I was going to be curious if that was a topic of conversation for you and your parents. Mm-hmm. But if your dad's camp was single sex as well, then it wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. No, that's a great wonder and question. And I think if anything, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. So actually, and my mother also grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. My dad grew up in the suburbs of New York. So actually what the like only thing was in our family was you will go to camp in Maine. So we were like the so of people where we grew up that went to camp, most of them went to camp in Wisconsin and Michigan. And we were like, the weirdos that shipped off to Maine every summer, and everyone was like, what are you doing? And it was like, this is how it works in our family. If you're going to camp, you're going to Maine. Which also I want to just name, like, even having this conversation is so privileged in the first place that we were able to afford to go to camp and to even consider these pieces. So I also know that there are lots of camps, including ours, that does work around scholarship to make it more accessible and affordable for anyone. But I've like felt the need to name that already. I'm in a very specific level of like, well, we were going to Maine if we, and not Wisconsin.
I'm trying to think, I mean, you might be the first podcast guest that I've had who went to camp in Maine, which seems, I mean, this is episode somewhere around 89 or 90.
Oh my God.
That many episodes that I shouldn't be able to remember. But it's enough that someone could be sneaking through. But I guess what leads me to the question, which is, I mean, is there a difference about going to camp in Maine? Why were your parents, I'm assuming it was just because that's where they went. And so they wanted you to have the same experience, but was there something specific about Maine?
Yes. So for people
that
don't know.
Does it have anything to do with the rain on the plane?
On the plane.
Sorry, continue.
It has everything to do with My Fair Lady lyrics. Nothing to do with anything else. So for people that don't know, Maine is this vacation land, summer, like, utopia state. And also, there is a huge camping industry. And so many lakes all over the state and so many camps on all of these lakes. And so part of it is the main camp experience is unique. So that was one thing that did that they had both experienced, where like the trips that they would go on or the hiking trips or the canoe trips all centered around these incredible landscape and small town experiences in the state of Maine itself, which was very formative for both of my parents' lives in general. And I think also their marriage and our family overall. So Maine, yes, in that way. And then we grew up in the Midwest, but they wanted us to have exposure to people from other parts of the country. And so Maine camps tend to predominantly have campers from the East Coast. So that meant my parents knew that in addition to the friendships we were building at home in the suburbs of Chicago and in Chicago and in the Midwest, we would also build lifelong friendships with people in Boston, New York City, Miami, California. And so that was another piece of it, was wanting to empower us to have friendships with people from other places. And that actually, for both my sister and I and my my brother also went to camp in Maine where my dad went, but he died when he was 15. So he's a whole other story in this, and teen tours were really where he thrived. But, but because of that, like, you know, growing up, like in high school, I would come visit my friends from camp and hang out with them in, you know, in like, and so I was hanging out with people from other experiences in other parts of the country. And my sister did the same. And that was formative to our perspective on life and the world, because our parents wanted us to, yeah, expand beyond our bubble. I mean, it was still ultimately a predominantly middle-class, upper middle-class, upper-class, predominantly white Jewish bubble. And still, like, regional experiences start to burst the bubble and help you understand that the world is bigger than your backyard.
Yeah, that's totally true. And you actually bring up an interesting topic, which is, I'm curious to hear your experience. So I went to camp in Mississippi, and I also went to camp in Indiana. Did it ever bother you, for lack of a better word, that your camp friends maybe were getting to see each other more often during the year than you were getting to see them?
Woo.
And because I had both. I had my local camp friends, but I also had my Midwest camp friends. And as I got older, like, yeah, there was that feeling of FOMO when they were getting together for bar bat mitzvahs and conclaves and things like that. So I was just curious if that, if you experienced that at all.
That's such a good question. I think a little bit, but, and also, I think one of the many life altering things I learned from camp was wanting to make camp friends in every aspect of my life. So, like, I roll deep socially. So I had really amazing friends where I lived, and I did sometimes feel like, ugh, I wish you were like my camp friends. You don't understand the full me. Like, that was also going on.
Yeah.
But I think because I did feel, to an extent, like, so satisfied with the friendships I had present, I was able to take the camp social skills and, like, expand them into the depths of relationships I was building at home. And, like, you know, we were big on the landline in the 90s, and we, my bunk mates and I, like, had an AOL, like, you know, email vibe going, but we also would write each other letters and mail 15 copies out to everyone else in the cabin.
Oh, wow.
So we'd send each other. So I also felt like, even though, you know, I did have some FOMO for the people in Manhattan, like, my bunk was actually pretty spread out around the country. There were people in LA, Miami, Boston, wherever. And so because of that, and Philly, like, I feel like we worked hard to stay in touch with the tools that we had in the 90s. And to this day, my friend Kate is in my phone as Kate Cell, because I had a piece of paper where I had Kate's cell phone, home phone, and then their family's, like, Bridgehampton home.
I probably, if I were to look through all my contacts, I would bet I still have some name cell in there.
Right. And it was because, like, I had all of the ways to reach Kate. God forbid I couldn't reach her.
That's so funny. And you're right. Like, if you're so spread out, then you're all sort of coming from the same standpoint and putting in the same. I love what you said. I almost feel like this is the title of your next TED talk, if you haven't done it already. But the idea of, like, not how do you nourish your camp friendships, how do you take the components that make your camp friendship so special and so satisfying and apply that to other friendships you have in your life? Because that is definitely, for me, there is a very clear distinction between the comfort that I felt around my camp friends and the comfort I felt around my other friends. Now, you could argue on some level that part of the reason I didn't have those kinds of connections to my school friends is that I wasn't around in the summer when they were hanging out and probably developing those relationships more significantly than we were during the school year. But either way, I was gone every summer. So I was not a part of that experience. But all the, which is just to say, that's such a, like, a great way to flip it on its head and think about how do you what are the things that make that so special, and how do you create that in other places?
Totally. I thank you for picking up on that. I'm happy to expand on that more if you want me to.
Sure, go for it.
I mean,
this can be the sample that you can send for to TED. Yeah.
Finally. Yeah. Yeah, I think there was just a moment when I realized, and I have a really good memory, but I can't remember if the epiphany hit me after being a camper or once I was a counselor, or maybe it was once I got to college. I can't totally remember, but it's similar to how, like, we learn to, like, we're taught, like, don't settle in a romantic partnership. It's like, I learned what was capable in friendship. So it's like, if you're going to be my friend, like, I'm not settling, because I know what is, like, the best kind of friendship that's possible. So that's, like, if you're in, like, you got to roll deep with me. And that's, like, the kind of friendships I look for. And I think in college, I made friendships like that. And as an adult, like, my friends from the spoken word poetry world and the artistic worlds I'm a part of, like, yeah, I feel like, yes, there is a sacredness and a holiness to my camp friendships. And there is for sure something unique when you have lived and breathed, like, eaten and 24/7 been with someone, and then add all the other things that you're doing at camp together. Like, oh my God, that depth of like understanding is that soul level is profound. And like, I do feel like I've been able to build that with people from other parts of my life, whether they were from growing up or college or adulthood or wherever, because like, there's no reason to not go deep. Like, what an unbelievable, like, if we're on this planet together and like, we're making a mess of it with each other, like, it's so much better to make it delicious and yummy, like a literal s'more of like friendship, you know, like, not to go too deep into the camp metaphor.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's true. And I think, you know, I find myself longing for that constantly.
Totally.
And being so appreciative of the friends that I have from camp that I can go deep with. And I, you know, I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I believe I have found in my experience that the more you get into long-term committed relationships, the harder it is to be vulnerable and not present like the social media version of your life.
Sure.
Of everything's great. Look how smiley and happy we are all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I think on some level, the pandemic has knocked that a little bit to the side, because it's such a shared experience that everyone's going through, and there was more opportunities to be sort of vulnerable and real with each other. But I think the most, you know, soul searching and bearing conversations that I've had in the last couple of years have almost exclusively been with camp people, because they're the ones who I, you know, feel like I can be my most authentic self with.
I hear that. Yeah.
So you've done a lot with Walden over the years, and I know you are you're a multi-hyphenate, you're a performer in lots of different ways. And so I'm curious, one, I like to ask this question for a lot of people who are in the arts. Did your time at camp inform any of that, and how? And two, are you actively pulling from your camp experiences in any of the various performing spaces that you do currently?
Such great questions. So I like to say that Katherine Kaufman C gave me my big break on stage in 1994 when I was the king in Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. And that was when I discovered I was like a killer belt and loved being on stage. And that was my acting debut. And I was a dancer and a singer. But like, then I discovered I was actually a triple threat. Thank you to Katherine for casting me in that role. And so, yes, my I was in it on stage at camp, and I was extremely, I also, the summer between my first and second summers at camp that year, I arrived my first summer in 94, kind of like introverted and shy. And I showed back in up in 1995, and I turned out I was very loud, and that's how I've been ever since. And so camp was my
now,
testing
let me,
ground.
Let me ask you about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you hear stories like that a lot at camp, which I think is wonderful because it really is a great place to sort of find yourself.
Yeah.
Do like, is there a moment that you can remember where you, sort of like the switch flipped, or were you even cognizant of it?
Yeah.
This transformation that you made.
Sure. So I've written a poem about it. And I think that I see the transition having happened more during the school year. And I think that there might've been something about camp that empowered me to learn to open up more in myself. So, you know, the summer of 94 to 95, I think would have been sixth grade. Yeah, like it's complicated. We're going to get deep, Micah.
And let's
like,
go. I'm here with you.
Trigger. I'm about to start trauma dropping. I'm a casual trauma dropper. So, so that year between my first and second summer at camp, that school year was the beginning of what would be a decade long eating disorder. And so so it's very complicated because in the one hand, I was retreating into myself mental illness wise and developing a decade long eating disorder and depression and all the other comorbidities that would go along with it. And simultaneously, while literally physically shrinking and restricting myself, I was also taking up more space vocally. So it's really fascinating to me to now look back in retrospect.
That is
so
fascinating.
Yeah.
I don't think of those two things necessarily going together.
Right. And my eating disorder would transition from predominantly anorexia to bulimia and binge eating disorder. And that does become a huge backdrop of my camp experience. And I also like to say that like the tools for what would become my now 17 years being recovered were from the self I discovered I could be at camp. No question that camp also laid the foundation for the ultimate recovery. But so all of this is to say, I can't pinpoint a single moment, but I think that as I was struggling with like who I was in my body and how to take up space and to manage the power that was myself while developing this eating disorder, but also like at school, I transitioned into like the more popular crowd, which all of that stuff, I think, which is so dumb and stupid and messed up and fucked up that like these hierarchies exist. But that's the true diagnosis of it all, is that I think as I transitioned into being more like present socially at school, it meant I felt comfortable coming back to camp and being like, I take up space. I'm in charge. I run the playground, which is not so great. And also, it didn't mean that I changed like who my clique was or my closest friends were at camp. Like, but I think it just, I showed up a little more vocal and I showed up like, and then that summer, you know, going back to the performing piece, we did Annie and I was Daddy Warbucks. and so like, you know, it's just very like loud and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't get to the other piece of it. And I'm also a writer and a journalist. And so I was the like editor in chief of our summer yearbook, my final summer. So like, yeah, camp really was where I got my jump off point professionally because, And I also like, I'm not just an indoor kid, you know, I'm also an outdoor kid. And I loved the water was like where I could be a mermaid and like water ski and canoe and kayak and sail and swim. And so I think it's very, it going back to the, like the shift from the quieter to the louder, like I don't, it is fascinating, right? That like, I was struggling so deeply inside, but also learning how to embody my life. But thank God that I was able to do that. And thank God I had the support that I had both at camp and at home to ultimately help me with healing and recovery. But yeah, I think it was a gradual shift. I just know that I showed up in June 1995 louder, but also literally restricting. So it was like very weird. But,
all right, I want to say something that's very dumb. And
do
then
it.
I'll,
do
and
the
then
dumb
I'll say
thing.
Something that's meant to be more poignant, but the dumb thing's on my brain first. So we're going to start there. here's what I'm picturing.
Yeah.
I'm picturing the summer. What was the first summer? 94?
Yeah.
Okay. So 94, I'm picturing little Caroline,
yeah,
you know, maybe with some long bangs, kind of half covering your face, not trying to stand out, whatever. And then I'm picturing like 95, the car rolls up and it's like slow motion, like the Ferris Bueller music. You get out of the car, you do that like hair commercial, like shimmy with your hair, and you're like walking in slow motion, and all everybody at camp has like their sunglasses and they're like peering over them as you walk by. That's what I'm picturing.
You're not off, you know. Add some Gap outfits.
Something is different. Like,
but also, you're super accurate. And I like had been there already. And there's in the camp like social currency, being a returning camper like means something. So I also think that like literally, because my dad actually would help. He would fly me to Boston or Portland and then drive me to camp. It was because he needed to get his mane fix.
Yeah.
So that was the ritual.
As one
so
does.
Literally I did get, like, I didn't come on the buses with everyone from New York or Boston. I was driven into camp by my dad. So I would arrive earlier than everyone else. And you're actually right. Like that 95, like arrival for lunch. I was like, Caroline, I was like, they know who I am.
Okay. So
that wasn't so dumb. That was great. That was really good.
Well, here's the thing. Cause what I really wanted to say was, one, I really appreciate, you may not feel brave to say it, but like, I know that a lot of people who have had struggles with disordered eating, there's a lot of shame. There's not a lot of ability to talk about it. So, you know, casually, if you will. So not that you need to hear it from me, but I think it's incredibly brave that you're willing to talk about it, because
thank
so many
you.
People won't.
Thank you.
And then off of that, I guess I'm curious, because I haven't really had the opportunity to talk about this, but I think it's a really interesting thing as far as camps go. And now I'm curious from your experience. So you were going through this while at camp.
Yes.
What was that experience like for you at camp? Did they know?
Yeah.
Like, do you look back and say with zero judgment, because obviously we've come a long way. I think, I guess, I don't know. I like to think we've come a long way with a lot of various mental health things in children. You know, if I were your counselor, I probably would have said, drink some water. Like that's like the solution for everything that happens to a camper at camp. Did, you know, were they able to be supportive of you in a way that was actually helpful, or was it just, they were doing the best they could at the time? I don't know. I'm curious.
Such a great question. And my sister actually is a therapist now. And these are conversations we do talk about, and we're actually going to be doing a training at a camp, first staff week around these issues, where she brings her clinical lens and I bring some of the more creative expression lens. So I just want to like shout out to that, but like that I'm not a licensed therapist, but speaking from my own personal experience, I think it was a both and. I think they were doing the best they could in the 90s with the information that they had. And then again, in the early 2000s, when I was a counselor. And also, I feel like my counselor specifically, who was in my cabin with me and then went on to be like the assistant director, and she was with us all of our summers, I think that she did an amazing job with the knowledge she had without being a trained professional herself to support me. And my mother and she were in conversation. And I think the understanding was camp is actually the emotionally safest place for Caroline. There are things that are happening for her at camp far outweigh all the other shit that could be happening. I think that I didn't feel like people were watching me too closely. I did feel like, you know, now camps have like camper care people and social workers on staff, which would have been nice.
Right. Cause you're asking a bunch of 18-year-olds.
Yeah. That are not equipped to do this at
all,
who might have their own challenges themselves. Like,
that's right.
So I think that when I was a camper, they did the best they could. I feel like, especially when I had transitioned into bulimic behavior, I know that my mother and my counselor talked before I got to camp. And the biggest concern was making sure I had enough fuel and nutrients for hiking trips and canoe trips. And I had an ulcer my last summer as a camper. So this is when I was 15 in 1998. And we did a practice climb before our big multi-night hiking trip up the top of the Appalachian Trail at Mount Katahdin. And so for that practice climb, my ulcer was acting up and it was too painful for me. And I came down and they still decided, like, let's still let Caroline go on Katahdin, because even though she didn't make it through the practice climb, let's do our best to empower her to get up the mountain as long as she's getting the nutrients she needs. And I remember, oh my God, this is making me emotional. Like midway up the first day of Mount Katahdin, we were going to be carrying all of our food for the whole many days we'd be up at the top of the mountain. And to be climbing Mount Katahdin when you're 15, the top of the Appalachian Trail, like, it's an incredible experience. And so we had like divvied up our food and the pots and pans amongst all of our frame packs, because it needs to be a group effort to carry everything up. And midway up the mountain, that first 6-hour hike day, it was like causing me too much pain. And I remember we stopped on the trail and like, can't believe how emotional I'm getting, but we pulled stuff out of my frame pack and divvied it up amongst my bunk mates so that the load was literally lighter and it was easier for me to keep going. And we did it. And like, that's camp, you know, yeah. That like, okay, Caroline is like, having some health stuff, doing her best, like she's cleared to be on this trip. She's got the nutrients she needs, but like the heaviness of the frame pack is kind of hurting, you know, the health problems that I had developed as a result of the eating disorder. And, but that everyone was just like, we got it, and divvied it up. And that it was an open dialogue is like, there was no shame in that.
That's incredible. Like,
unbelievable, you yeah. know? And so I think, and of course, the 90s could have been better for everyone around mental health. The 90s were the wild time to be alive. But that like stuff to me is like, wow, that's really the best they could have done. And I felt really supported. And then when I was a counselor too, like, you know, I was able to, like, the summers I had my own car, I could make sure that I had like the snacks that made me feel supported. And it was tough, but it was also like, I didn't have shame around it. It was a known thing. And then I know that there were also people that didn't make it back to camp that were in other age groups because their eating disorders were so severe, they couldn't come. And so it's so tough, but I do think camps do much better now than they used to. And the world has improved drastically, but yeah. What a hike we went on, Micah.
Yeah. Metaphorically and literally for you
just now.
That's so heartwarming, right? Like that's yeah. what you want the reaction to be from people. I mean, it feels yeah. like one of those posters of the, you know, I don't know, Jesus and the footprints or whatever it is. That's really incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's transition from that.
Great.
To our Campfires and Color Wars questionnaire, title still pending. This is a chance to share a few more of your camp stories. So question one, tell us about your most romantic camp memory, which I don't know. I'm curious to see. Yeah, that's the question.
Great. It's so complicated to answer this question because it's like, it assumes that like everyone is like a sexual romantic being, but then there are asexual and aromantic people. And then it gets a little cis heteronormative, but like my camp, like, you know, and that's why I also say predominantly historically all girls, because there are plenty of trans and gender queer and non-binary folks that whether they transitioned before or after being a camper that are part of my alum crew and camp world. But I feel it's important to name that I'm a cisgender straight woman. And so for me, being at a predominantly all girls camp. My opportunities for romance were when we had socials with boys camps.
Got it.
And so I know that I could have just answered Micah, but if you've figured it out by now, I give all the preface for the socio-political shit.
I get it.
So for me, of my social experiences, I think I just got to go with my first kiss with Jesse Peters at our social with Camp Wigwam. It was the first time they tried having a social on our beach at the lake. And so it sounds romantic, but I was a little overwhelmed and did cry a little on the cabin steps that night. But like, it was still like, you know, I got to have my first kiss with, you know, on the beach at my favorite place on earth. But it was a little weird. He was a kind of weird dude. But
the question is, to be perfectly honest, like the original question for number one was just tell us about your first camp kiss.
Yeah.
Because that's where it started from. Because my hypothesis is that no one enjoyed their first kiss. But it has spun into just what's your most romantic camp memory, which is not necessarily first kiss related.
That's so
but
funny.
Since you brought it up, I now want to know, did you enjoy it?
No. Why else did I cry on the cabin steps?
Like, I was gonna say, you're probably not crying. Oh, it was so great.
No, it was not great. But I also felt like, oh yes, I made it. I got my first kiss. I can keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you gotta, you know, you gotta, you know, what's the rip the band-aid? That's not what I want to say, but you gotta do it at some point. And
yeah,
then it gets easier from there. But no,
exactly.
The first one is almost universally terrible. So that's why I was curious.
Yep. It checks out.
That's
adds
right.
to your database. Of
no offense, Jesse. I don't think it was necessarily your fault specifically. Well,
no,
I guess I don't know, but you know, the situation.
I hope in my experience, it's improved. So hopefully I have something to do with that, you know?
Yeah. All right. Number two, tell us about your best camp performance.
Well, Micah, so glad you asked. It is without question or fail when I was Diana Morales in Chorus Line in 1998. My rendition of Nothing is still discussed to this day. And during rehearsal, I was so loud they could hear me at the tennis court. So that is without a fail my best.
That's awesome. And so... what was the setup? Your camp does like a Broadway style production,
yeah,
oldest
so,
unit every year.
Yeah.
Kind of.
So every single age group, there are 7 age groups of campers. Every age group does a musical each summer. So
Holy moly.
Every Saturday night is bunk show night. That's what it's called. And there's all these songs about like Saturday night when it gets dark, the bunk show starts. So every camper from the 9-year-olds to the 15-year-olds have their go at it, whether you are townsperson number one or the lead or, you know, whatever it is. So yeah. So we did a musical. You have
like,
a week to do it. And it's so good.
Okay. So I want to make sure I'm understanding this.
Uh-huh.
Every unit has 1 week to put together a performance. It's not like, okay, we're going to give the youngest unit 1 week, but the oldest unit is going to get 7 weeks because they can handle. Okay. Everyone is the same setup, 1 week, learn, start.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. It's amazing.
That seems like a lot of work for somebody.
Well, it's a lot of work for the head of the performing, you know, it's called the HHC, which is the building where it takes place. But there's a whole staff that their entire job for the summer is to put up these musicals. And some of the older shows get cast earlier in the summer. So you have your script so you can start memorizing your lines if you want in advance. But yeah, that's like what you do for that week. And, you know, I mean, there are talented age groups and there are less talented age groups. My age group was talented enough that they were like, we're going to give you Chorus Line at 15. And it was, I'm not making this up. It was so good. Our Chorus Line was so good.
That's good for you. I've told pieces of this experience a lot on the show, so I won't go into the whole thing, but I was Tevye in Fiddler.
Which
I think in hindsight is like the worst play to do at camp. Because Tevye has so many lines.
So my
That's
sister
like the whole
Tevye.
Summer.
My sister was also Tevye. They did it there last summer. And like, it's, it is a really, to carry that show is a big deal.
It's a lot. I mean, I enjoyed
how long
it.
Did you get to work on it?
We had a month. I mean, it was a 4-week session. So we probably found out, you know, casting and whatnot, probably sometime in the first week. And then you had about 3 weeks, give or take, to do it. It was a great experience. And I've told the story on the podcast. I missed a scene during the show.
What like scene?
When the constable comes to tell them that they gotta pack their shit and go. I'm paraphrasing.
Where were you? Just hanging out
just backstage? Thinking that I wasn't in this scene, completely forgetting that I was. There's so a whole good. Thing. If you go back and listen to the very first episode of the podcast, not you specifically, anyone who's listening to this the first time. I feel you know, it's interesting hosting a podcast about camp. I do have a lot of stories.
Yeah.
But like, I only have so many stories.
Sure.
What is the right amount of times? I think about this constantly. What is the right amount of times to tell the same story without sort of like, all right, we get it. You were fucking Tevye. Like, I don't need to hear it again. But also like, maybe you're listening to it for the first time and you're like, well, I want to hear that Tevye story. So I don't know.
I will say this. Don't we retell the same camp stories over and over for the rest of our lives? And
for
therefore,
sure.
Isn't it like the literal meta point of it to keep telling the same? So I say, keep telling the Tevye story. Yeah. I think it's incredible.
The next time
I hear it, I'm going to laugh again.
Yeah.
I hope laughing's okay. I hope
suffice to say, it was like every decision I made in the moment, if there was a decision tree and there was like a right decision and a wrong decision, I just kept making the wrong decision. Like I didn't come out, bad move. Then I decided to come out like as the scene was ending, bad move. Then the constable was like vamping. He's like, did you hear what I had to say? I could have just said, yup. And I go, nope. And then I go, but I think I get your drift.
Which is exactly what Tevye was written to say.
Yeah, you know. So, you know, the whole thing was a debacle. But you know, overall, I still think it was a successful performance, but that's pretty much me in a nutshell, to be perfectly honest. I'm not a stickler for details, and this kind of thing has happened to me repeatedly throughout my life. But yeah, Tevye, that's just a lot of lines for anybody to learn.
It is.
Do more ensemble pieces, I guess is what I'm saying.
Like chorus line. Which is also like plenty had to be cut for it to be appropriate for children.
Sure.
Trust.
Yeah. I haven't seen Chorus Line in a really long time, so I'm not entirely familiar with what all happens, but it's Broadway, so it's probably some adult themes that
for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Question three. What is the most embarrassing experience you had at camp?
I genuinely can't pinpoint it, which doesn't mean I didn't have embarrassing things happen, but I think there were just like a lot of moments my first summer where I felt like I didn't know like where I belonged quite yet. And so as I was navigating all of that, there were just moments that felt really embarrassing. Honestly, if I think like to flip the question, I remain embarrassed by a specific moment my second summer where I remember a very specific rest hour where I was kind of mean to someone in my cabin. And I'm embarrassed by that I actively chose to like not be nice. And that is embarrassing to me that like in this, you know, that like we're here talking about how incredible camp is. And then there are people for whom camp is horrible and traumatizing. And so I'm embarrassed for anything I ever did that contributed to someone not having an amazing time.
Yeah. And look, I can appreciate that and respect that point of view. And I think at the same time, I would also say that in a way that is also part of the beauty of camp is you have the safety to make mistakes
for sure.
And learn
no
from
question.
Them. And when you are, I'm not letting you off the hook for your actions.
Yeah.
But when you spend 24 hours a day, seven days a week with a group of people, there's bound to be some friction. And we're not always going to be our best selves.
Totally. And like, I don't want to like,
I mean, I never did that to anybody, but I'm
no, know, like it wasn't the most egregious thing ever. I like kind of made, you know, what fun of someone in a moment. And it just, yeah, like I think I wish I could have been better.
Yeah. No, yeah. I respect that. But you learned from it. And so,
but I learned from it. Yeah. And I've written poems about it if anyone wants to find it. Literally, the poem is called Camp. So if you go to my website and find my YouTube channel, Camp, it's also I'll link to that, layered.
I'll link to that in the show notes. All right. Question four, top or bottom bunk?
Bottom.
Any particular reason why?
Yeah. So I never had to be in a bunk bed at camp, but I prefer bottom because I pee a lot. So if I'm going to need to get up and pee, I'm a top bunk person. Like I have a top bunk soul. Does that make sense?
Yes.
But my body requires bottom bunk access to the bathroom.
I feel like you could extrapolate a lot from that.
I'll talk about it in therapy later today.
I totally get that. And you don't want to be in the middle of the night fumbling around trying to, it's bottom bunk all the way. All right. Question five, what is the hardest you ever laughed at camp?
I know that you gifted me access to these in advance, but again, like with the embarrassing one, but in another direction, like, isn't literally all laughter at camp the hardest you've ever laughed in your life? And like, I cannot think of a time at camp, because all I picture when I picture the hardest ever laughing is like someone is on the ground hyperventilating as a result of laughing so hard. And like, didn't that happen all the time? And what does come to me is a moment with a camp friend, not at camp. Is that allowed?
Yeah, I'll allow it. The judges will accept it. Okay. Yeah.
So my friend from camp and I, she was a couple years older than me, and we reconnected outside of the bathroom at two nights in a row, same bathroom, at the String Cheese Incident concerts at the Beacon Theater circa 2008, probably in New York City. And then we discovered that like, not only were we both Walden alum, but we were huge fans of the band Phish. And so she became my Phish touring buddy when Phish got back together in 2009. And God knows how many shows we saw together. But there was a show, we were on our way to Jones Beach from New York City in her car. And I had to pee so badly. See, it all goes back to my bladder, Micah. And we stop at some gas station and I get back in the car. And since you said I could say adult things, I'm going to tell you what I really said. What I really said as I got back in the car with Susan Gelman was, my vagina feels like a whole new world. And for some reason, she thought this was the funniest thing she'd ever heard. And we laughed so hard that for years to come, out of nowhere, she'd be like, my vagina feels like a whole new world. And we would just laugh and laugh.
Now, would that honestly then spur like singing from Aladdin or?
That is the correct like direction to take that. But honestly, like that is like the hardest. And thank God I'd already peed, or I would have peed on myself in her car. But like, and it's not even that funny, but it's like you add the camp person laughter and you lose it.
Right. It's just that frequency that you end up operating on the same level as someone. It almost doesn't, I mean, some things happen that are objectively hilarious. Yes. Sometimes it's just, you happen to be at the right frequency at the right time with the right person.
That was it. Yeah. In a traffic jam on the way to Jones Beach after I peed. That's it.
I love it. I've told the story of my friends reenacting the scene from Super Troopers where they chugged the syrup. So I'll go with a different one that actually just came up the other day that I'll try to do justice. A friend of mine had a girlfriend at camp, and they were very opposite. She was very like loud and personable, and he's very like reserved and don't make waves type.
Okay.
And she and some of her friends were swimming in the pool. We were all staff members.
Okay.
And I want to say I think we stole their clothes. I think that's possible.
That sounds right.
She thought he did it. And they're coming down from the pool back towards main camp. And she is like wearing a towel and is like yelling at him. Was that you? Like, if you did that, I'm going to drop my towel right here. Because like that would be the appropriate punishment for him, would be for her to drop.
To be naked in front of everyone else.
That's right. She's like, if you did it, I'm dropping my towel. And so we're all like, he did it. It was him. And she didn't do it. But like just the threat of it made just us doing that just made us laugh so, so hard. And to this day, I have such a clear memory of her like stomping down the hill towards main camp, like just berating him because she thought he'd stolen her clothes and he was not guilty. But we were more than happy to throw him under the bus for the sake of the joke. That was a good time. Let's move on to our final segment, which is Roses and Thorns, aka Strawberries and Lemons, aka Peaks and Valleys, aka Pals and Wows, aka Coals and Diamonds. Did you guys have anything that you could add to that? Did y'all call it anything else at Walden?
We didn't really do that. I learned that once I became like engaged professionally in the Jewish summer camp world, doing a lot of facilitation and education work and performing work. That's where I learned a lot of the Rosebud Thorn stuff. So I don't know that we really did many highs and lows stuff, but we had trust. There was plenty of checking in and debriefing going on. Sure. Plenty.
Didn't have another title.
Yeah, we didn't have another. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Did you have one at your camp?
Yeah, we called it Bitches and Roses. I've been trying to evolve the language from that a little bit
for sure
recently, but so just a chance to share one good thing and one bad thing going on in your life. It can be micro, it can be macro.
I'll
allow you as the guest to go first.
So a good thing going on in my life is I just feel like I'm doing some really exciting collaborations right now with some people I love that feel like camp friends, even though we didn't go to camp together. So one is I'm working on a musical with a friend from college, and another is that another artist friend and I are like putting together some potential video stuff around some of my poetry and his vision as a filmmaker. And so just feeling really good. And another friend has an idea for something that they might loop me into. So just feels really good to be collaborating with people I love and making art with people I love.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have one, but do you have a thorn?
Yeah. So two things. One is I just got over having COVID for the second time. And it was 20 million times worse symptomatically than the first time I had it in January, February, 2021, which was before I was vaxxed and boosted. And so I will just say, like, on the macro level, like, this pandemic is still happening, and I really wish, we weren't out here fending for ourselves. And so I'm just like praying and hoping that somehow we collectively, take on the camp spirit in this country and world and figure out how to get through this. And then the second thing on a macro level is it's real out there what's happening politically. And I'm someone who is able to get pregnant and could need access to an abortion. And so what's happening with Roe v. Wade is scary. And also it is happening for so many people outside of even reproductive justice, the ways bodies are not being given a chance to make the choices for themselves that they need is terrifying. And so to bring it back to camp, I will say, I also wish again, in the camp spirit, understanding that we are all different bodies and having different needs, I do think is a thing that camps do their best to do. And I think there are camps that have especially done incredible work around inclusion and accessibility. And so I wish the camp spirit were everywhere is really what I'm saying. So that's those are my thorns.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. My rose I am, as we are recording this, we are on the cusp of summertime.
Yes.
And I am going to be traveling around to a lot of camps this summer. to do programming, which I'm really excited about. It's something I've always sort of thought would be fun to do, and just never had the flexibility or sort of the hook to do something like that. But everything that I do sort of professionally really is at its core like a camp evening program.
Totally.
So the fact that I am now getting to do that and literally do things that are akin to camp evening programs, or specifically our camp evening programs, is really fun. And as much as I talk about camp, I really only have two camps in my arsenal of experiences. So I'm very excited to get out to some of the different camps this summer. You know, I might as well say it. I still have a few spots left. So any people at camps that are listening to this, you know, hook me up via email, and happy to discuss potentially adding more to the mix. And my my thorn, I'll go micro, just because I will echo everything you said about Roe v. Wade. And that is just that I got some new running shoes. And every time I get new running shoes, I'm always like, all right, are they going to mess with me or are they not? And I've been getting the same pair of running shoes for like 15 years. I don't even try them on. I just walk into the running store and I say, give me the, you know, another pair of the, I think the Air Nimbus maybe is an ASICS shoe. And they've changed the makeup of it some.
No.
And my hip is kind of bothering me.
Oh, no.
But like, it's also possible that it's like psychosomatic and I'm just imagining something. But I'm like taking a, I don't even like to run. I just do it because it is the easiest form of exercise. so now I'm like taking a few days off just to like kind of let it sit for a minute. But I'm like, is it the shoes? Is it me? Is it because I'm old now? I don't know. But it's just, it's messing with my brain.
Oof.
And I don't
like it. Thank you for sharing. That's so real. I hope you get to the bottom of whatever it is and that it improves.
Yeah. I hope that just having taken a couple of days, that was just like a one-off thing. And then I can get back to it, because I don't want to have to like do something else. Running, I can just walk outside my door and do it, and nothing else is required. All right. Well, that is our show. Thank you so much, Caroline. You're an excellent guest. I love getting to talk about all the various topics we covered. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on really every podcast listening tool you can find: Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google, Apple, etc. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at Who Knows One on Facebook and Twitter, and Who Knows One Show on Instagram. Of course, you can catch episodes of Who Knows One Wednesday nights at 8:30 Eastern. If you want to see Caroline's episode, it's in our archives. You can check it out. She was a wonderful contestant.
Thank you.
And Caroline, if people want to find you online, where can we direct them?
Yeah, you can go to my website, carolinerothstein.com. And then I'm on all the social medias, Caroline Rothstein on Twitter, on Instagram and Facebook, and then on Twitter, CE Rothstein. I've got stuff on YouTube, but honestly, if you go to my website, that's your one-stop shop to find all the things. And thank you so much for having me. This has been so fun. I love talking about camp, and it has been so fun talking about camp with you, Micah. Thank you.
Well, thank you. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Micah Hart. And as we wrap things up, Caroline, I like to finish with something my dad would always say about camp, that time is precious. So you have to really make the most of it. So I will say to you as we conclude this episode, don't waste a minute, Caroline. And you can say back to me,
don't waste a minute, Micah. I don't know.
Happiness runs in a circular motion. Thought is like a little boat upon the sea. Everybody is a part of everything anyway. You can have everything if you let yourself be. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs, happiness runs. Happiness runs.